But for now, welcome to the board as well. The Office of the Auditor General, the media, everybody is welcome in the meeting. Today we're meeting PRASA. There's one story that I would want to tell in our follow-up on matters of accountability. It's one institution at times you'd want to read about. It's got its own up and downs, but the recent appreciation to the fact that there's a lot of capturing off the ground in terms of the rail system countrywide, which has collapsed in reality. When we looked into the previous audit, the caption was clear that we are dealing with what we term at the time things fall apart. The bits and pieces which are being somewhat collated here and there are a good indication that indeed something is happening. In appreciation of that story, we recently took a tour of the Central Line. I think it was on the 20th of April that we took that visit. We saw how the capturing of that rail is happening. Though with a snail's pace, there's some promise which was made on the day. There's a man who's working for security, the head of security at PRASA. Is he here? Oh, there he is. He said to me, come here at the end of May. You'll see a different story. Because I was pertinently asking about Philippi. Line to Philippi. Those people won't be there at the end of May. They come. Indeed, I took a risk yesterday, which I thought that this should be before this meeting. But I saw the same story. And therefore I had prepared my own list of questions. To my surprise, I was asked to chair this meeting because the chair, unfortunately, could not be part of the meeting because he has been held somewhere else, and he sent his own apology. That's why I'm standing in for him. So there are big questions that you're going to answer from me. I will see whether the members will deal with those questions. If they don't, I'll get on those questions. I took my own way of looking into these things. And the similarity, if you travel through Maitland, you see how these are the kinds of settlements that are growing up next to the rail line. And those are the things that one would appreciate looking into. May the soul of one of standing young activists who was working very hard to ensure that such work is finalized. I hope that his name will do the best, Ndavankosh, who was shot dead in action on a fateful day and passed on. So just for his name, I hope we'll somewhat pick up the pace and see something happening in terms of capturing fully that line. So colleagues, we meet them today, fortunately with the full presence of the executive, the minister and the head deputy. They are here, the DG, the GCO who has been now appointed, welcome sir, no longer acting, which is one of the good stories that we could probably appreciate. You see, in this instance, we are going to give the minister a chance. After the minister, will ask the board and the board to the CEO, and after that presentation, we'll then ask SIU to make their own presentation to capture the entirety of the Prasa story. Honourable Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable. I don't know whether to say Acting Chairperson, if that is in order, Honourable Somio, Honourable Members of SCOPA, Deputy Minister of Transport, Honourable Samango, Prasa Board Members, led by the Audit and Risk Committee Chair, Ms. Ndidi Mbia, Executive led by, from the Department of Transport, led by the DG Advocate Mlao, and of course executives from SAMHSA, APRASA, led by the Group CEO, Mr. Hisham Imran, members of the media, representatives of the Office of the Auditor General, SIU as well. I greet you this morning. We are indeed appearing today with leadership of Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, known as PRASA, that is led by the Board of Control, ARC Chairperson, Ms. Ndidi Mbia, as I've indicated, to present progress in implementing corrective measures as per the invitation letter. When she makes the presentation or her remarks, she will then introduce other Board of Control members who are here with us, as well as the executive team, as they start to make their presentation. I just want to make some few remarks, Honourable Chairperson, that PRASA, as we all know, has been in the news for wrong reasons that are known to this Committee of Parliament. I can report today that the Board of Control of PRASA has put various strategic mechanisms, interventions and plans in the form of the corporate plan approved by the Minister to drive the change needed to take PRASA from challenges experienced through instabilities at governance level, management, corruption, capture, COVID-19, theft and vandalism of infrastructure to a new entity that delivers on its mandate. PRASA is definitely on an upward trajectory from a performance point of view. When the entity was presenting its annual report in December last year, they reported a dismal 19% overall performance. We are reporting an achievement of a 59% of the performance target in the last financial year, up from 19% the previous year. This improvement is attributed to the increased number of critical corridors recovered, the stations that have been built, and the lines that have been reintroduced. PRASA is currently operating about 19 lines, 13 of which are operating new trains. This indeed, we believe, is a remarkable achievement compared to the same time last year. The remaining big challenge in further improving services is the ability to repair the signaling system, without which we cannot address the frequency of trains, meaning the increase in the number of trains in each line. Hence, PRASA still operates a limited service in the lines that have been opened. The main focus in their plans for the current financial year is to fix the signaling system so that they can run more trains, especially during peak hours. This is critical to respond to the challenge and demand for more trains. To this end, work has commenced in Gauteng and Cape Town to implement the resignaling program. And we have actually instructed PRASA that they will have to focus on this one, so that we deliver on the signaling of these lines. This requires that the war room, which was very instrumental in accelerating the recovery project, be sustained and even capacitated further. Another critical success at PRASA is the ability to spend the capital budget, which saw the allocation being exceeded by 8%. That is from 13.9 billion rand spent versus 12.6 billion rand allocation. In the distant past, we have not seen the safety permit being extended by 29 months. In other words, the Relay Safety Regulator safety permit recently awarded to PRASA is valid until August 2025. This is very important and confirms PRASA's improved efforts at placing safety at the center of their operations. On the 10th of May 2023, PRASA launched its national safety campaign, which should further assist in assuring safety to commuters and all other consumers of PRASA services. Security has also improved significantly. We are observing a significant decline in security occurrences on asset-related crimes. The biggest challenge with security is to sustain the current deployments beyond the infrastructure rebuild program. Bringing down the levels of crime and its violent nature have come at a huge cost to PRASA. PRASA needs substantial financial injection for security operations. This will also be allocated for modernizing and introducing technology in our security infrastructure. We encourage our partners in crime prevention to invest more resources in these initiatives. There also has been a considerable investment in capacity and skills. The following key executive positions have now been filled to address high leadership instability. That is the group CEO sitting next to me here. He is appointed Chief Human Capital, Group Company Secretary, and Chief Audit Executive, Regional Manager, Gauteng Metro Rail. We are, of course, concerned about the suspensions, particularly that are taking forever on a full pay. In this regard, we have instructed PRASA to finalize these matters as soon as possible. Also, Ziveze is another project that PRASA is embarking on. In the presentation, we will be updated on the progress that PRASA is actually making on this one project, which is about the ghost employees. In conclusion, I'm hoping that by the time the term of this board of control ends in around October, they will have created an environment whereby PRASA will not regress on the paths of recovery and sustainability. I thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members of honourable members of SCOPA in Parliament and National Assembly. I thank you very much. I can hand over to yourself. In fact, I can, if you agree, hand over to the ARC Chair. Thank you. Also, my apologies. There is also the Director General from the Department of Transport, but however, I hand over to the ARC Chair.
Honourable Hadebe. Thanks, Chair. I thought I was going to get apologies. I don't see the board, Chair.
Okay.
Yes, if that can be addressed. Thank you.
Minister or ARC Chair will take that responsibility for just clarity.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The board chair indicated to me that he might arrive late to the meeting. I think the members are aware of the issues regarding the board chair, which we are processing. We expecting, we wrote to the chair regarding the issues related to him and the house here in Cape Town, and we gave him up until today, the 7 days, for him to respond to our letter that we wrote to the chair. Is ending today, so we expected that he's going to write to us. If he comes, it will be fine. However, if he doesn't come, we think that the actor is leaving. So that is what I know for sure, that he said he will arrive late. But I just want to alert members that indeed there is a process that we are undertaking. In terms of the law, and practice as a matter of fact today. He is still the chair of CRASA board. Thank you very much.
I hope that that's fair for the committee to know that the whereabouts of the chair. So there are two things. One, he might be late. Two, assumption he has a task to fulfill from the minister, and the task is within the frame of response which is awaited by the ministry regarding what has been in the public domain. Summarily, that's what the minister is saying. Let's leave with that and give to the chairperson of CRAB as they refer to her.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members of SCOPA, and the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the DG, and everybody present. As the Board of Control of CRASA, we continue to be committed to making sure that the governance prescripts or in CRASA continues to work, and we enforce and making sure that controls in CRASA are effective, because at some point they were ineffective, and we stand here today with a great improvement in terms of audit findings, resolutions. There were material irregularities that we identified when we started, and there were six of them, of which now we have managed to reduce 50% of that, and we continue to make sure that we deal with the remaining ones. And one of our biggest, which we're starting here, we are finalizing, is pertaining to the conditional assessment of the assets, which we have engaged Siemens, and we also engaged service providers in making sure that the fixed asset register is properly reflected on the SAP system. As part of the improvement plan in making sure that we move from a disclaimer point of view to maybe a qualified audit opinion, as we previously indicated to the committee. But one of the successes of the board is to we ensured that our oversight role has been properly engaged to making sure that CRASA continues to deliver what it needs to deliver to the nation of South Africa. And this is evident based on what the minister has also indicated with regards to the improvement. The performance of 59% as compared to the previous year, and we have applauded the team in the efforts that they've made in making sure that we are where we are today from the dismal performance in the prior years up until now. And as the minister has mentioned, we continue to strive to improve the corridors and reopening more corridors. And the board continues to do oversight. Just last week, we also did an oversight on the Centurion line, which had a sinkhole, to make sure that line is ready. We were notified that the testing should happen this week. As part of one of the successes is making sure that we spend on the capital budget, which has been allocated, and we have exceeded the budget, and that is a good improvement. As the board, we continue to capacitate the team. As the minister has mentioned, we made sure that the critical positions that were vacant for a very long time has been filled. And the minister also pointed out which ones were, I don't want to repeat, which ones were filled, which the board can lead in making sure that those positions are filled. And those ones that are in the purview of the CEO, we had also taken a lead to be observers in making sure that the process is followed to the T as well. I think in terms of the overview from the board, I will stop it there. But with me today, I am with Director Matutsi Mukuba on my left-hand side and next to me. And I'm also with Director Advocate Monna Pula Motukhelwa next to him. And then, yeah, that's the board members that are currently available today. The other board members has asked to be excused because some of them are traveling. They are on holiday. They were not, by the time they received this invitation, they had already made those plans for the holidays, and unfortunately they couldn't get out of those. I think for now I'll hand over to the group CEO, Mr. Hisham Imran, and he will also introduce the team, his team that he has, while he also takes into consideration the presentation before you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jessio.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to you again, to the honourable members of SCOPA, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, the DG and his team, the board members of PRASA that are present, the PRASA ESCO team that is here with me, also to the SIU and the AG that is present, and in the media. Good morning to everyone, and thank you for the opportunity. I think we welcome the opportunity to present to SCOPA in terms of particularly the progress around the corrective measures at PRASA. I think what we also want to demonstrate, and I've got the team here with me, is the commitment of the executive team at PRASA together with the board in terms of the urgency that we need to bring to the table in recovering and rebuilding this very important transport mode for the country. The determination and the commitment from the team I think will come through as we progress through the presentation. Certainly there is a lot of work that still lay ahead for the team to tackle, but certainly in the last 12 months there has been some progress, as you have mentioned, Chair, but a lot more work that needs to happen going forward. Chair, in terms of the presentation that we have put together for SCOPA, we will start off with a broad overview just of some of the key highlights, achievements that we have done in this period. And then we've broken the presentation into three parts. The first part is what we received from SCOPA in terms of providing a progress on these corrective measures undertaken at PRASA. Specifically, we want to start off with the security plan, Chair. I know, as you've mentioned in the recent site visit that you have had, there were quite a few questions on security, and I'm going to get our acting head of security, Mr. Alex Papadopoulou, to speak to that item and address those questions that were raised, but also clearly articulate the integrated security plan that we are rolling out at PRASA. We will then move on to the irregular expenditure at PRASA. Here I'm going to get the acting CPO to delve into that, where we are, the progress that we have made, and the next steps ahead regarding irregular expenditure. We will then move into the SIU investigations that have been ongoing. We've made significant progress in closing a number of those cases, but also highlight some of the other disciplinary matters that we are dealing with at PRASA, and here I will get our new, if I can put it that way, Chief Human Capital Officer, recently appointed, Ms. Naledi Modibedi, to speak to those items. Give an update on Project Siveze. There's still work in progress there, but update the committee on where we are with Siveze. And then finally, under Part A, we will deal with the Audit Improvement Plan. And the measures we have undertaken, the steps we have put in place and then also report on progress to date regarding the audit improvement plan. And I will ask Mr. Krishna Kavanda to speak to that item on the agenda. We'll then move into part B, and this is, I think, giving a bit more detail around some of that progress that we have achieved, particularly on the capital program, and share with you some of the plans ahead with the new year and the recovery of the rail system. Part C, the third part of the presentation, is just some of those strategic matters that have been raised at Scopa. We've also, in addition to the presentation, we've provided in writing some of those responses that came from the earlier meeting, the last meeting we had in December. We sent that through to the Secretariat. But the issue around Stadler, I know Honorable Lees also had questions the last time around that matter. The Siangena contract, that deals with our integrated station access management, also known as the Speed Gates project, where we are with skills development, and it's some of those matters that is currently in litigation that we want to give an update. So that sort of, in a nutshell, is what the presentation will cover. As I've mentioned, on some of these aspects, I will hand to my colleagues to speak to these items in a bit more detail. Chair, just in terms of the overview, that I'd like to highlight a few points, and I think the one message is that we have seen, particularly in the last 12 months, I think members have also mentioned it, there's been a cycle of continual improvement. There's been progress on certain matters, which is positive in terms of the recovery and rebuild of PRASA. We by no means are saying the job is done. It is far from done, but there is positive steps in the right direction in terms of turning this entity around. One of the key things, honorable members, as the minister has indicated, the performance of PRASA over the last few years has been atrocious. It's been dismal. The performance in 2021, in terms of achieving our targets, PRASA was sitting at 19%. In terms of achieving the targets that were set, the year that has just passed, that's ended now in March 2023, the performance has improved significantly, and we are sitting at 59% in terms of achieving our targets. That is an increase from the previous year of 40% on the 19% to take us to just shy of 60%. It is an upward trajectory. It's not where we want to. We want to see an improvement going forward. The team is certainly committed to exceed on that and improve on that going forward. But that was only done through particular focus, commitment, as I mentioned, a focus on making sure these targets are achieved. We've made it very clear as the management team the urgency that is required and to implement a 24/7 approach to bring back the rail service. The target that we've achieved in terms of the 59%, it relates to the corridor recovery, the corridors we have recovered, the number of stations that we have brought back, firstly in terms of basic functionality and somewhere there are improvement. It also includes making sure we've got the target in terms of the number of train sets being available that we require to run the service, that those targets were met. We also have targets related to the general overhaul program. That's the heavy maintenance of our existing fleet, the yellow and grey trains. That contract kicked off last year, and we met the targets that were set in terms of the general overhaul program. We met targets in relation to our safety and security in terms of occurrences and incidents, where we saw significant reduction in terms of those targets that were set. And then also importantly, the deployment of the new trains, the EMUs, the blue trains on a number of corridors. During the past financial year, we've deployed on 8 of the corridors we recovered the EMU trains. So that was another target that we also met going forward. And we've got the detail in terms of all of that, as well as those targets that we did not meet. We've got the information, and we can provide that breakdown in terms of that information. As the Minister has indicated, this year going forward now, we are still busy with recovering additional corridors. We've heard the board member indicate that we are now busy with the testing of the Lerala to Germiston service in Gauteng. We've got the go-ahead from the Railway Safety Regulator to start testing, and we are hopeful that by the end of this month, early June, we can launch the commercial service from Tembisa. So that's one that is quite advanced. You may also have seen, honourable members, we've also done some interim or pilot interventions to address the issues around platform gaps that we see at some of our stations. So we've got the more medium to longer term program in terms of addressing the gap with the platforms. Here we've looked at the short, medium term interventions that we are looking at. Particularly on that line, we've got significant gap between the train and the platform that we need to address. And I'm happy that the team, we're taking the initiative to look at some of these interventions. It's one of the critical things that the Railway Safety Regulator has also raised. But the point I want to make, in addition to the corridors that we are targeting this year, and there's a number of them that we are working on, we are also looking at those corridors that we have already recovered. It's about how do you start optimizing the service on that corridor. As the Minister has indicated, it's about bringing back our signaling system. As part of this period of theft and vandalism, that's one of the infrastructure that has been badly impacted. Many of our corridors we are operating under manual authorization, and because of that we are able only to run a limited service at this point in time. We need to get to a point where we can start running high frequency services on these corridors, particularly in the peak periods. And the signaling system is one of the critical interventions that we are prioritizing this year in terms of optimizing those existing corridors, but then also bringing back some of the other corridors that we are rebuilding. The War Room has played a critical role in terms of this accelerated recovery program. That War Room at PRASA, where with the regional teams all linked into the War Room from the various regions, have been instrumental in terms of coordination, integration, also learning lessons from between the various regions in terms of how do we recover, how do we deal with approval from the RSR, and it's assisted with the acceleration of the recovery program. There are daily meetings happening in the War Room, whether it's with contractors, our service providers, whether it's the regional teams that meet on a weekly basis to report on progress with the executive team. It's a fully functioning War Room, and it assisted greatly in terms of the coordination and the accelerated recovery. One of the major achievements we have done this year, honourable members, for the first time at PRASA, that the capital budget, the allocation, has been spent. It has been one of the key challenges we have faced over the number of years where we've not been able to execute our capital program and the associated budget. This year, or the year that has just passed, our allocation was at 12.6 billion. For the capital program, and as indicated earlier, we not only spent that, we exceeded that by 8%. 13.5 billion is what we have spent in the past financial year on the capital program. We've got the breakdown in subsequent slides on how we've achieved that, and that is critical not only to ensure the recovery of PRASA, but also the sustainability of the rail system going forward. It's critical that we roll out this in line with the modernization program. What we have also seen in the past few years where there's been underspend on the capital program, we have seen the impact it's had on the rail industry. We have received numerous approaches, numerous correspondence from the industry where SMMEs, small companies, industries are forced to close down because of the non-expenditure of the capital program at PRASA. One example is on the rolling stock, where the maintenance, the GO program, a lot of those companies that were in existence before no longer exist today. So the impact of not spending has got far-reaching consequences, not only for PRASA, but the industry at large. So I think it's critical, as PRASA, as the SOE, these budgets that are allocated to PRASA, that we give it the highest priority in terms of ensuring we are able to execute effectively. One of the other key achievements within this, within the past financial year, is our ongoing engagement with the railway safety regulator. PRASA is not guaranteed to run trains. We need to demonstrate we can do so safely. And we need to demonstrate to the regulator that we have got the capability, and also we've put the right systems in place, and also upgraded effectively. And through our ongoing engagement with the RSR, we have been issued a 29-month permit. Previously we had a 6-month permit, and before that it was sort of an ongoing month-by-month basis. So it's a significant, I think, vote of confidence in terms of getting the 29-month permit. Yes, we actually did apply for a 36-month, 3-year contract. 29 months was issued. There are a few things that we are still addressing with the railway safety regulator, but I think it's important that that relationship and that is one that has seen improvement and its ongoing commitment between ourselves in achieving some of those requirements that we need to do. The issue, and I won't touch on that in much detail, but around security, around safety, we've seen a significant reduction in terms of the number of occurrences. But we also acknowledge that we are running a lot fewer trains than what we ran in the past. So the numbers would therefore also correspond to that. So we do acknowledge that, but we have seen in terms of targets that have been set, we have come in well below that in terms of the number of occurrences. For us to ensure that we can successfully execute also the capital program, which I've touched on earlier, in this period we've also looked at enhancing our capacity, our skills within PRASA. There's been some key filling of critical vacancies at the technical, at the supply chain level, also at finance that deals with our audit cycle and so forth, and the colleagues will touch on a bit of some of those key capacity enhancements. And then also what we have done, a critical award that we have made this year, is the appointment of an EPCM, contractor service provider, that will bring in significant skills around engineering, procurement, as well as construction management. And that's to beef up some of the technical skills in particular that we lack in terms of implementing this capital program. Just as a matter of interest, if you look at the medium-term budget allocation, PRASA is allocated in the region of 40 billion over the next 3 years that we need to execute successfully, and we need to ensure we've got the capacity to do that. That excludes, Honourable Chair and members, the previous year of under expenditure that we've had on the capital program. So there's an additional probably 15 billion in terms of under expenditure over and above the 40 billion. So it's a significant capital investment going forward over the MTF that we need to be geared up in terms of being able to successfully implement that program. And hence we have taken some of those actions. And then finally on this slide, again, there's been some key appointments at executive level to deal with leadership instability. You would have heard also when I made some of the introductions, there's still a number of positions where we've got people in acting roles that we need to move.
I hope that you are going to clarify the EPCM model.
Okay. So EPCM, Honourable Chair, the acronym, it stands for Engineering, Procurement, and Construction Management. So within that space, you are bringing in a contractor service provider that brings engineering skills, it brings procurement skills, and also the issue around construction and management. So in all of those areas, we've got the service provider that can plug in the capital program to assist where we have got gaps in rolling out on some of these critical projects within our capital program. That appointment, Honourable Chair, it's we've done a 5-year appointment of a service provider to assist us through this period. critical for PRASA on that is to ensure that through that period, you make sure you also do the correct capacity building skills transfer to ensure you are capacitated adequately through that. But because of the acceleration and the urgency, we need to get that capacity on board to assist with that program. Chair, are you covered? For now, for now.
For that
okay.
Acronym thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions will follow.
Thank you. So I was just touching on the last point on the slide was around the appointment of executives to deal with the leadership instability. The minister has already mentioned those key appointments. The group CEO, I've mentioned the chief human capital officer, Ms. Naledi Modibede. Can you just show yourself there, Naledi? She's been appointed, started now in April. We've also had the appointment of the company secretary, Ms. Lindiwe Ntaise, sitting in the back row. And then from 1 June, we'll have the chief audit executive also starting. Mr. Bonkinkosi Zemase will be starting on 1 June. So significant additions to strengthen and get that stability. And as the board member indicated, we will be accelerating on those other positions as well in terms of getting that stability at that level. So, Honourable Chair and members, we then move on to the next part of the presentation, which now speaks to these corrective measures. I now want to bring in my colleagues, starting off with Mr. Alex Papadopoulou on the security plan and some of the, I think, those key questions that were raised that he will cover. Take us through those few slides and then we'll take it from there. Alex?
Honourable Chair, members of SCOPA, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, DG and the team from DOT, PRASA board members and colleagues. With regards to the security, PRASA in June 2021 looked at a security plan that was an integrated one and an all-inclusive one. The main issue that we faced at the time, there was zero corridors operating. That was the first part, and the second part was to figure out a way to bring stability, not only from a project's perspective, but from those working in the various corridors. So we developed the plan, and in December 2021, we deployed our first intervention unit, which was in the Mabopane to Pretoria. And our approach was a phased approach whereby we did deployments, we did analysis, and continued to monitor wherever that we found needed tweaking. From that, one of the other critical issues within PRASA was due to our hands being tied in terms of the Judge Slope ruling, PRASA wasn't able really to go out to the market to look for security assistance. So, however, we did write to the National Treasury requesting a deviation to work with our state-owned entities and partner, and we approached the Airports Company South Africa in order to assist using their security panel. We then deployed what we call phase one and phase two deployments in terms of the security. And the phase one and two, the main aim was to align with the business and make sure that any corridors and the aimed 16 corridors initially had the necessary controls and measures in place for PRASA to deliver. We then also recently have deployed our phase three, which started on the 1st of May of this year. And the areas are covered not just within the Western Cape, but nationally, and not just looking at PRASA operations, but also taking into account our MLPS, our mainline passenger service, which runs up to Limpopo and Mpumalanga area, as well as the assistance to AutoPax, which is also part of PRASA. our capital projects, when we're looking at it, was mainly to support the business, and this is looking into what we call our phase two, which is the stability of security technology. We needed the business to catch up, obviously, because our infrastructure was vandalized to the bare bone. And with the onboarding of the various security companies, we were able to bring the stability, which has been bringing the contractors back, which allows now the phase two, which is our technologies to be implemented, which covers our substations, tie stations, high sites, and this links into our Gauteng nerve center as well as the nerve center in Bellville. It was a main alignment to our depot modernization programs, our fencing requirements, and the implementation of protective measures for all mission-critical infrastructure of PRASA to deliver on its mandate. Equipping internal, our PRASA security strategy is what we call a hybrid model. It implements internal securities that were onboarded during 2020, and we work a 60-40 model, whereby we have 60% now onboarded service providers, which assists with the deployment and short postings, which we faced previously. The establishment of the integrated command and control security solution, it also allows the protocols to be monitored from a single integrated approach. Obviously, the dynamics in the country, we have various external interferences, whether we look in the Western Cape, to give you an example, KZN, as well as Gauteng, have these various dynamics that obviously approach the security, the service providers within our infrastructure to try and gain. Next slide, please. One of our main projects is also where we've turned to Arms Corp. We have created a project which is called our C4I Deviation Project. This is what, there are 57 forward bases. Colleagues can see a forward base example on what you can see on the bottom. 57 forward bases are being installed within our rail infrastructure. PRASA's rail infrastructure spans over approximately 2,300 kilometers. We have segmented this infrastructure so that we have proper command and control with what we call MTTRs, which is mean time to respond, which is a shorter period where any incident or accident has occurred. Over and above that, we have got vehicles fit for purpose. Our infrastructure is runs spans through various terrains, and therefore we've got what's called the WP1600, which is a tactical vehicle, colleagues can see in the top right, which carries a 10-man team tactical response unit, as well as what we call a WP1800 on the left, which is a mobile monitoring system where we deploy in any areas that are volatile. Next slide, please. Our long-term contracts, PRASA Security has formulated specifications, which is going out to the market now. We are in the finalization of dealing with what we deem the Judge Slope ruling. In the background, PRASA has developed specifications based on actual environment analysis that has been done over the past 2 years. Included in the specification is also our UAV, which is drones. So within our specifications, we have included drone technology, which allows PRASA to build capacity over a period of time to ultimately do a skills transfer in order to train our own internal drone operators, which allows us to have eyes in the sky. Currently, as it's being operated, our current service providers, we do run the same system where we've got eyes in the sky for reaction and monitoring. The process of protection services, as I said previously, in our formulated plan, and it's been implemented, has started to bear great fruits. through the interventions and through the various integrated approaches with communities, SMMEs and various service providers, we've had a decrease of over 75% in theft and vandalism. And noting the fact that the corridors are coming back and the decrease is still happening, so there's a definite hands-on approach in terms of security. We have outlined in this presentation, it shows how we're fighting against the crime and corruption that we face, the protection of assets, and also due to the integrated security approach, we've dealt with what people term the construction mafia. In Cape Town, obviously, we faced in a certain element when it comes to construction mafia. The same thing we were facing in the KZN region when it comes to the construction mafia and the business forums, as well as in Gauteng when we look at more within our outskirts areas there. We have the same approach there. But the nice thing about our integrated plan, it's an all-inclusive. So people do take part that actually live in and amongst our rail infrastructure on the outskirts of our rail infrastructure that have been integrated. And this has proved a great success in terms of our fight back to take back our rail. As the Honourable Minister had mentioned, one of the main issues at BRASA that is also a bit of concern is the funding, specifically in the protection services. Initially, a lot of funding is needed as we are doing and managing from a deployment perspective because we have got warm bodies managing the infrastructure. And over the period of time, within the next 3 years, we are deploying what we call our phase two technologies. And over time, the warm bodies then become reduced, and then we follow a model of prevention is better than cure because our systems have got those early warning and management as well as the command and control via our C4I project. Thank you, Chair.
Before we move to the next section, which is on irregular expenditure, Alex, can you just give an update on Philippi? Yeah, please.
Sure. So one of the projects that we've developed is called Project Begela. And what it was is, unfortunately, BRASA is not in the business of relocations. And while waiting for the HDA as well as the City of Cape Town with regards to identifying the land, BRASA has taken an approach where we've started implementing what is called Project Begela. And if colleagues note, 5 months ago, if you visited the Philippi area and you had stood at the Philippi station itself, you wouldn't be able to see any of the rail. So what we did then is we worked together with the communities and the integration in order to shift the current shacks that were interfering 10 meters away from our infrastructure. And we started infilling. We've gotten to a point now where there's approximately 800 shacks in the way from between Nyanga, specifically on the Nyanga side, towards Philippi. And what we have done is we've identified land in terms of BRASA's land by stock road, which is a temporary measure. And colleagues will note that at the end of May, as the Chair said, one would note that we would have completed the 800 temporary move to the stock road, which then allows, from the beginning of next month, it allows our OHTE contractors as well as the Pearlway contractors to start rebuilding that infrastructure. It's one of the projects that the late Loisa Nkola really assisted BRASA with in terms of assisting with communities living within that infrastructure. So that project is moving. There's been, as I said, if one goes towards Philippi and walks along the line there, you would note that it's actually starting to clear out where we've got just the one pocket which will be cleared out by the end of this month, and then allows the train and the formation, the contractors to get in there so that we can join Enyanga to Philippi and then move from, obviously, Philippi onwards Captain's Club on the way to Chris Haney and Kylie Chan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Alex. The next, can I get the acting CPO, Mr. Asif Rahman, to present this section? Asif?
Good morning, Honorable Chair, members of SCOPA, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Director General of Transport, members of the CRASA Board, members from SIU, members from the Auditor General, the media, as well as my colleagues from Group EXCO at PRASA. Thank you, colleagues. I will take you through the irregular expenditure as we have been reporting in terms of our regular interventions and meetings within PRASA to bring down and reduce the irregular expenditure that is saddled with at PRASA. At the beginning of April 2022, the opening balance of irregular expenditure was at 30.49 billion. In the financial year that we have actually concluded, the irregular expenditure recorded was 428 million, taking the closing balance as at the 31st of March 2023 to 30.9 billion. We have concluded the condemnation process in terms of the determination test and the loss control, and submitted it to the regulatory authority where the condemnation needs to be approved. That's sitting at 12.350 billion. Then in terms of condemnations that are being subjected to the determination test, which is currently with our internal audit team, supported by a co-source partner in terms of SNG, the total value is sitting at 9.6 billion. And lastly, we have a value of 8.9 billion, which is currently being addressed by the various business units to finalize the condemnation submissions as well as the supporting documentation that will then be submitted to internal audit to undertake the loss control and determination test. Thank you. Can you move to the next slide, please? In terms of the graph that is projected, it basically shows a downward trend in terms of irregular expenditure. The irregular expenditure has been decreasing since the financial year 2016-17, with a notable decrease in the financial year 19-20. The reason for the notable decrease, it's the advent of the pandemic, which was COVID. There was minimal spend during that period, hence the decrease in irregular expenditure during that period. However, the increase in the subsequent years to the spending on those contracts previously declared irregular, majority of the contracts that have been declared irregular are multi-year projects, so they span over 3 to 5 years. Once the process is concluded, the irregular expenditure will be subjected to the regulatory authority in where the transgression applies. As I said earlier, management is addressing the 8.9 billion irregular expenditure, which is yet to be submitted to the determination test, will be undertaken by group internal audits. Supply chain management has put in place initiatives to enhance the controls. We have updated our SCM policy. We have developed standard operating procedures. We have continuous training on SCM staff, as well as members who sit on the bid committees. There are ongoing training in terms of instruction notes, directives issued by the regulatory authority to curb and also to educate the respective individuals in terms of the elements that governs SCM. Thank you. In terms of the, there are six transactions that have been concluded to a total value of 12.3 billion. Two is currently sitting in National Treasury at a value of 41.9 billion. 12.3 billion has been submitted to National Treasury. There were certain questions which we have addressed and submitted back to National Treasury. In terms of further interventions that we have put in place, the Group CEO has mentioned earlier, we have increased capacity within SCM to identify and detect irregular expenditure, fast-track the condemnation process, as well as the removal of irregular expenditure from the financial statements. Management has instituted internal and forensic investigation for the condemnation of irregular expenditure. Furthermore, the SIU is assisting PRASTA with investigations. In terms of our high-value tenders, we've also put in a process where we got external assurance through probity. We appoint external teams to basically sit in all aspects of bid committees to ensure that the process is compliant with both legislation, prescripts, as well as the supply chain management policy, that when it gets to the delegated authority, all those tick boxes are checked and that the process is fair and void of any irregularities. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Chair, we then move on to the next section, which deals with progress on the SIU investigations as well as disciplinary matters. Now, lady.
Thank you very much, Group CEO. Good morning, Honourable Chair, SCOPA members, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, PG of Transport, Board of Control of PRASA, and colleagues, good morning all. I am just going to take you through the progress that has been made to date in relation to the SIU investigation and the outcomes thereof. In total, there was about 33 cases. Of those 33 cases, 28 of them has currently been completed. And if we then go back, the breakdown for those cases are as follows. The dismissals that resulted in those cases were two of them. The resignations were two. Final written warnings that came out were about six. Written warnings about two. Not guilty, about 13 of them. No action taken, it was about two, and only one for early retirement. So currently only five cases that are still ongoing in relation to the SIU investigation. Employee one is just on a matter of fair disqualification of bidders, and here all of these cases from employee one up until employee 34 I'm actually running in between the whole of this week, and in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I think this is where we will then be for getting the outcome of these cases and bringing them to totality and finality once and for all. Employee 5, there's just that where the line manager was found there is no prima facie misconduct in respect to the material irregularities. But however, I think caution must be taken because there was another another charge that was actually put into the employee in relation to the very same cases. Next slide, please. So these are the categories of the disciplinary interventions, and when you look at the categories of the misconduct, three of the employees were actually charged on procurement and related irregularities, seven on fraud and theft, two on irregular expenditure, gross negligence about three employees, misconduct and gross misconduct about 15, honesty and gross dishonesty about two. I think that meant their gross dishonesty. Under investigation is still about seven. So in all, we have about the number of suspensions that are currently there. It's about 39. This is a combination of management and also junior staff. So these are some of the disciplinary interventions that currently happen. And after investigations, either the suspensions will be lifted or where appropriate, or there could be an alternative placement where appropriate during a disciplinary process that will be the outcome of the hearing, or there could be a settlement agreement between the parties. And where applicable also, an employee can opt for early retirement, depends on where they are in terms of their age. And also they can opt for an expedited disciplinary processes through written submissions instead of the full disciplinary hearings. The other option could be the presiding officers of the disciplinary hearing they also have the vested powers in determining the validity of any applications and procedures that are actually brought by the employees. So PRASA, we often conduct pre-hearing conferences at first sitting of the disciplinary hearing. So therefore, after the parties therefore agree on a time for filling of those preliminary and interlocutory applications. This is just to try and shorten the process of many applications that might come after when their process has already started. Next slide, please. I think this is on project. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Naledi. Honourable members, just in terms of Project Siveze, we also reported this at the last meeting we had with SCOPA, where we also clarified at the time the reference to the 3,000 coast workers, where that 3,000 related to actual number of staff that had not verified themselves as yet and were not necessarily coast workers. The team at PRASA have done further work in terms of the investigation around, let's call it our employee, the database. What we had found as part of that investigation through security and HCM in the main, that there was a figure of approximately 2,200, where this relates to exceptions that we found in terms of various categories. These are not necessarily coasts. Through that investigation, we found that there were issues of questions around qualifications, confirmation of qualifications, issues around criminal record, and then also what we could define as coasts. The team, particularly around the issue of confirmation of qualifications, affidavits from SAP in terms of the criminal records and also the CIRA qualifications, we had given those colleagues 3 weeks to respond and confirm that. When that was not done, salaries were stopped around that, and then we saw a quick submission of documentation around those things. Now, the figure of the 2,200 and the colleagues will come in also relates to where we can call it those persons have exited the system since we started the process. When Project Siveze was started, we were reporting on an employee, if I can call it, total employee number sitting at over 17,000 employees at PRASA. As per our latest report, which is April this year, the total employee numbers is sitting at 15,500. And some of that is where we've seen some of this exit the system during this period. Now, the issue around what we have done, which is very important, is there's no doubt there are internal control lapses and weaknesses within the system. HCM in particular, we've made sure we implement certain controls to tighten around this, down to the level of each line manager having to sign off on who is in your department, who is working, who should be paid, down to that level. But over and above that, I think to properly close this item around Siveze and the issue of our weaknesses in terms of internal controls, which in the main is sitting at HCM, but also you've got control lapses sitting at ICT. You've got control lapses sitting within finance. We did report, Honourable Chair, at the last meeting, we wanted to appoint forensic investigators to come in and drill into all of those departments, identify those weaknesses so that we can close it. I was hoping that by today when we present to the committee, I could confirm we have made the award of the forensic investigators. And this is into HCM, into ICT, into finance, into SCM. Unfortunately, we could not make the award. I have still given the assurance that by the end of this week, the appointment will be finalized for these forensic investigators. I would like, as myself, the management team, that we can report to the minister, to our shareholder and the board, a clear outcome and process around Project Sevese, so that this matter is properly reported on and also closed in terms of going forward. For now, what we can give you is that update that we are sitting with. I'm hopeful once we have got these teams on board, we can then present that plan, that program on closing this thing properly in terms of Project Sevese. So we've indicated some of those steps we've taken internally just to tighten controls. Within the HCM environment, we are automating a lot of our processes in terms of moving on to SAP, cleaning up our current record system, and also ensuring through the confirmation of our organizational design structures that people are allocated within the org structures appropriately. So that process is ongoing. We started at the head office level. That is being rolled out now down to a regional level. So that's some of the progress. I think with the appointment of these teams into these various aspects, we will be able to drill down and close on these weaknesses that I think has clearly come up in terms of these critical departments. Is there anything, Naledi, Alex, you want to add on this item?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's also important to note while the forensic is happening, those cases that are clear-cut have got a whole list of criminal charges, so case numbers of the investigation. One of the findings, if I may just give you one example, is when we trace a so-called ghost worker, we don't have an employment file. A person is on the system. Once you track that specific ID number, you then end up with a person that will tell you, I've never been employed at BRASA. That's the first part. The second part is when you trace the bank account, the items that have been traced to this day, you would find that a syndication would operate whereby they would approach someone in township and ask them if they can go and open a bank account. The person would then go with this individual to open a bank account at a Capitec, to give you an example, and on that same day, the card plus the OTP plus the cell phone number being used to manage that bank account is not even being done by that owner. So that's just one example of giving you the understanding of how deep we are going as protection services together with law enforcement in analyzing the case-for-case matter and obviously finalizing what is needed from a forensic perspective, looking at our shortfalls of our internal systems, as the group CEO has said. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Alex. Chair, the last section, Honourable Chair, under the corrective measures deals
with... But the group CEO is saying they have not appointed as yet the forensics. So you are saying that's why the forensics are happening. Maybe at some stage we'll...
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Apologies. We on to the next item, and this is the last item under Part A, which deals with the corrective measures, the audit improvement plan. I think this is a critical one that we put a lot of attention to try and turn things and show progress on our side. Mr. Krishna Govinda, if you can just speak to these few slides, Chair, and then we'll move on to Part B after that. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, SCOPA members, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, Board of Control members, Group CEO, and colleagues. Chair, just in terms of the starting point, subsequent to the close of the last external audit, I think it was clear that we had to focus our attention on key specific things that emanated out of that external audit process. I think in the main, understanding those key areas, particularly from our fixed asset management perspective, irregular expenditure, then from a commitment perspective, particularly the material contracts that exist in PRASA and how we understand those contacts, how we manage those contacts, and then lastly, how do they culminate themselves in terms of the disclosure from a GRAP perspective into the financial statements. And then just lastly, I think the other core sort of area that we focused on is the financial discipline in the organization. And we've framed it as what we call financial close process. Inherently, what we found is all processes, again, culminate themselves into an annualized year-end process rather than a monthly process, particularly from a discipline perspective. So I think just in terms of understanding that and what the root causes have contributed to that, I think we try to understand from a control perspective, and in order to implement the right and relevant controls, particularly around skills mix and resources in order to deal and close those gaps. Secondly, from a process perspective, what are the right operating processes that allow us to get to close the root causes related to these issues? And then I think just lastly, from an ICT perspective, particularly from a workflow perspective, is related to automation as much as we can to bypass manual processes so that we just have a greater sense in terms of the data integrity that resides in our various systems. So that's essentially how we built the plan. And I think it was always going to be a time-based plan, particularly around milestones that we are trying to achieve. And then just lastly, from a monitoring, reporting, and an accountability perspective, we workflowed it through the group exco into the audit and risk committee, particularly on a monthly basis that found itself into the board of control. Then, Chair, just in terms of the key issues, we understand the audit previously was disclaimed around fixed assets, property, plant, and equipment. So just in terms of, I think, the first initiative around resting our asset register, where we have the ability to give and hand over to the Auditor General some semblance of a credible register that is supported by various transactions, etc. We undertook to understand that we required to undertake a physical verification of that asset base. And in that regard, we had brought in Siemens, who had the right technology at that point in time to be able to assist us in terms of the short timeline that we had to the financial year end. I think this slide, I'm not going to go through all the detail, but I think what it is meant to articulate is in the main the robust sort of planning process that we undertook, because we have clarity of mind. We want to plan this properly so that we do not have to repeat these processes again in years to come. So that in the main is the purpose of this slide. If you can move to the next slide, which culminates into the results of that verification process. So you'll see we started fairly late in terms of the process, but be that as it may, we managed to achieve in 6 weeks a fairly high level of verification, particularly in the areas where we were hamstrung in the previous external audit cycles. And that in the main is around network assets. I think just from a verification perspective, as much as the numbers are there, I think just at an overall level, including the assets under construction, we managed to achieve around 68% through this external verification process. It must be stated that I think as part of that process, there also was internal verifications that were done by teams across the various regions, etc., that would then form part of the overall assessment in terms of trying to achieve 100% verification. I think the second to last bullet speaks to the automation related to this. I think in years gone by, we have always undertaken physical verification, but the process to get that data then back into the SAP environment was a manual process. So typically you've got anywhere between 60 to 70,000 lines of assets. So you can only imagine how long it takes from a manual perspective. So at the back end, we automated this so that the right information flows back through an automation and an upload process, and we've managed to successfully do that. If we can move to the next slide. I think just culminating and leading up to the annual financial statement process and submission, I think there's just some a few items that still remain outstanding in order to achieve that. I think in the main, it relates to particularly the GRAP compliance aspects. One around conditional assessment that was achieved through the external verification, but what that means in terms of various accounting entries that need to be processed around impairments. Reassessment of useful lives related to assets that exist in the field, etc. And then just lastly, I think we struggled in the previous years to provide asset reconciliations that were in terms of the balances that were disclosed in the financials and what resided in our asset registers. And I think we're closer to the answer in terms of what we'd be able to provide to the AT this year. If we can move to the next slide. Chair, then the other material area which we had disclaimed on was the space related to commitments. I'm sure we all appreciate that Gibella is our material contract running into billions at PRASA. In the previous year or the previous audit cycle, we had quite a few what we term indexation, so it's the annual increases that are meant to be reflected in the contract. Those were outstanding for 2 years, one on the main contract and one on the capital spares and tools aspect.
You have 3 minutes, huh?
No problem, Chair. Yeah. Almost at the end. So I think in terms of that, we've managed to conclude those processes. I think from a financial perspective, we've closed all the calculations, and we, at a fairly advanced stage, having shared that information with the AG in terms of a mini interim audit process in order to get us to the financial statement submission. Next slide. Then, Chair, look, just lastly, I think in terms of the financial close process, which I've spoken to earlier, I think just from a resource perspective, we've brought in some resources in order to assist us in various areas. One, from a financial statement preparation perspective, and it has coverage across all the key areas, particularly assets, irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditure, and then some of the other material balances that reside in the financial statements. I think also just from a resource perspective and understanding compliance as being one of the key areas, we've managed to recruit a structure or people into a structure into that. And it's not only for the purpose of the financial year end, but I think it'll allow us to have continuous improvement around compliance as well as the internal controls within the organization. And I've spoken to the last point. I think that's it. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll hand over back to Group CEO.
Group CEO, in 5 minutes.
Okay, Chair. We spend more time on part A. I wanted the team to give more detail. There are still two parts. Chair, you want me to cover it in 5 minutes? The part B and part C. Okay. So I'll push through that quickly, Chair. Part B was just to give an indication of progress in terms of the capital program. Honourable members, that's just a list there of the corridors that we have recovered. The main amount there being in the previous financial year. You can see the 13 corridors. Four of that was in 21-22. And on all of these corridors, we have deployed the new train sets. Those are the blue, the EMU trains are running on all of them. In addition to that, we've also recovered these corridors here. Here in Cape Town specifically, Langa to Pinelands, to Nyanga, as well as the corridors in Durban. There we're still currently running the old fleet, the yellow and grey trains, but processes are also in place to start deploying the new trains on these corridors as well. The general overhaul program, I touched on this earlier, this is the program that looks at a major overhaul, heavy maintenance of our existing yellow and grey trains. That is under started last year and is one of the targets that we have achieved. We've got five contractors around the country that is responsible for the general overhaul of our metro as well as long-distance Shosholoza mail coaches. The depot modernization program, a key program in Prasa that is a number of years behind schedule. This program is more than 8 years behind schedule. And it's critical to get the depots modernized to enable Prasa to have the right facilities in place to maintain the new trains. What we have done is interim arrangements at some of the depots to at least do first-line maintenance on the blue trains. The most advanced depot that we have got at the moment is Wilmington in Gauteng. But we need to roll out the other depots. As we speak, the Wilmington Phase 3 depot is in evaluation. Benrose, also in Gauteng, is in evaluation. These are turnkey projects, design and build. The Baden Island depot here in Cape Town is out in the market, and it will be closing the middle of June, where we will then fast-track the evaluation thereafter of those depots. Also part of the depot program is our depot walling and fencing. This is being implemented as we speak. You visit any of the six major depots around the country, you will see the walling program is quite advanced, whether you go here to Salt River or Pardon Island, and here we're implementing a concrete walling solution together with CCTV as well as seismic detective cables in terms of any movement or with the walls in terms of trying to breach. So that is being rolled out. Majority of that will be concluded by the end of June, with the latest end of August in terms of closing off on those projects. That's just an update that you can see on each of the projects where we currently are from a progress point of view in terms of the depot walling. And then as we've touched on earlier, critical projects this year is signaling. We've listed six of the major projects in the signaling space and indicated where we are with that in terms of implementation. Certainly here in the Western Cape, by the end of this month, we will be ready to start implementing around the signaling on the central line. The contract has already been signed, award has been made, but critical there is dealing with obviously some of the encroachments that we have in the reserve. And we've mentioned various other projects there that many of them will be starting within the month of June, and some latest quarter two of this financial year that we will roll out these signaling projects. But these are critical, as both the Minister and myself have touched on earlier, in terms of optimizing our services. In terms of stations, for this year, from a station modernization, and this is typically upgrading of stations, any station we were investing above 5 million. There are 33 that we have identified in terms of the target. We've given the breakdown there per region, and of the 33, I can confirm that 31, we already have an award. We have awards in place, and in many cases, we're now in the process of getting contractors onto site on those 31 stations. The only two that we still need awards on is Germiston and Randfontein, and that will be done shortly. Now, over and above this, honourable members, there's also 55 stations that Prasa will be working on, in line with corridor recovery as well. Over and above the 33, that's around looking at station improvements, enhancement, also basic functionality that we will be rolling out within this financial year. I touched on this earlier, the capital program. There you can see the what I referred to earlier, where we've achieved our capital spend, 13.6 as opposed to the 12.6 that was allocated. That's the bars in the middle of the slide there. And you can see going forward for the next three financial years, the green bar indicating our allocation, and roughly the 40 billion that I mentioned over the MTEF, as well as underspent CapEx that we will have to look at, taking us well over 50 billion. And it's important that PRASA is geared and capacitated correctly to execute this program. The other bars there is just showing where we are looking at the spend happening, in both in terms of earmark funding from rolling stock renewal, the GO program, the signaling program, and then the other category. Other means all other infrastructure, your depots, your corridor recovery falls within that allocation. This slide, Chair, I'd like you to spend a minute on very quickly. It's a critical one for PRASA going forward. And this is where PRASA requires operational funding support during the recovery and rebuild program. It is critical for the sustainability of PRASA while we are recovering. You can see from the graph there over the next 5 to 7 years while we are recovering, Honourable Chair, the passenger numbers are still low. It still needs to recover to where it needs to be. Just as an indication, the year that we have just passed, the annual passenger numbers were sitting at approximately 15 million for the year. In 2019, before the pandemic, we were sitting at 230 million passengers per annum. And in 2014, around about that period, we were sitting at over 550 million passengers per annum. And that is obviously in addition to the operational funding support that we get from the fiscus. We depend heavily on revenue from fares. And the fact that we are down by more than 95% while we are recovering, there is a critical need through this period to get the operational funding support for PRASA through this rebuild and recovery program. You can see there from the graph how we see over the next 5 to 7 years how the passenger revenue will be increasing as we recover, as we roll out the signaling and the high-frequency rail services. We are estimating that over this period, you are looking at approximately 7 billion rand in terms of operational funding support. Most of that required in the earlier years upfront, and then as the passenger revenue increases, a reduction in terms of that support going forward. I must hasten to add, honourable members, that and these submissions are already with Treasury through submitted through the DOT in terms of this requirements, where there's ongoing engagement with our colleagues, our shareholder, and then also the National Treasury around these requirements. I need to also mention that as part of these discussions, one of the key things that Treasury have raised to PRASA is what are you doing around your operational expenses and on in terms of sustainability going forward? Is it expected that every year you will be knocking on the door of the shareholder and Treasury to say we need more, we need more? What are you doing to cut costs? And one of the things that is on the table but still needs to go through due process in terms of consultation, buy-in, and final approval after consultation is the issue around right-sizing, optimization within PRASA. So the reason I'm raising this is that 7 billion that we talk about over the next 5 to 7 years takes into account a optimization, a right-sizing process in terms of the headcount at PRASA. If that does not proceed, you are looking at over this 5 to 7 years a figure closer to 20 billion that we would require in terms of operational funding support. To give you a sense, if there is no right sizing, every 6 months there will be an additional 700 to 800 million required to satisfy that requirement in terms of one of the highest, if I can call it, expenses that we have got currently within our operating bill. But those we have got, there are detailed submissions that have been provided. One of the key things within that, I need to mention this, Chair, that's also sitting with your Treasury.
I hope you'll be closing up.
I'll close now, Chair. I'll close. Is around AutoPax, our subsidiary in terms of the long-distance bus services. The subsidiary is currently going through a business rescue process. We've indicated there over the next 3 to 4 years how AutoPax will move into a self-sustaining business, but there are some critical requirements that we need. One of them is obviously settling some of the debt that is sitting there, but the key one is about the recapitalization of AutoPax. And there's a figure of 700 million that we've indicated. The business case, the planning behind that, the turnaround plan is with Treasury. We're hoping in the next week or two these things will be resolved. But I just wanted to mention it, Honourable Chair and members, in terms of that key requirement as well, in terms of funding. Part C, which is on strategic matters, the Siyangena issue is there. I think I'll just mention that while Prasa had won this matter in court, Siyangena has filed an application to leave of appeal on this matter. It's sitting at the Supreme Court now, Supreme Court of Appeal, and we are waiting the outcome before the next steps on that is done. Chair, I don't think we'll have time to run through the skills development, but all the information is there, the detail is there, the training that we have done. We've exceeded our targets in terms of training that we have done. There's good relationships with teacher in terms of rolling that out. And some of the plans that we have got, exciting plans going forward in terms of partnerships and also enhancing on the issue around skills development. We're also running for the first time at PRASA a skills audit exercise that we are hoping that by the end of March 2024, this process should be concluded. One of the questions raised was the issue around, has PRASA reported this matter to SAPS? And this is around the signalling contract in Cape Town. It was raised. We also provided a written response around that. We are engaging, and we've got the SIU present with us so that we close this matter, I think, appropriately. Currently, it still sits as a pending matter that we need to close, and we've got plans in place to close that. On the issue of the Stadler locomotives, we are still pursuing, and we want to close around the commercial agreement. I think just the one point I will highlight here, Honourable Members, because this matter is taking considerable time to get to a commercial agreement around the locomotives, we have also now engaged our legal team to see in the interim with those locomotives that are currently here in the country an option to lease those locomotives through the liquidator at quite a reduced cost, because PRASA at the moment requires access to locomotives quite urgently. So these things have been now quite advanced discussions at the legal teams around finalizing the commercial agreement as well as the leasing option around that. The SIU is present, Chair, on the lifestyle audits. We are about to conclude the secondment agreement with the SIU. We are indicating that we are targeting the beginning of June to commence with lifestyle audits at PRASA. At the executive level, executives at divisions, at the regional level, and also a deep dive into the SEM department in terms of doing this lifestyle audits. I will be number one that will put myself forward that we go through these lifestyle audits. So that by 1 June, we are looking to kickstart that, but we'll leave it to SIU to confirm from their side as well. Chair, we've just listed some of the key things there, but I think in the presentation around litigation, we've touched on them about Judge Lope on the security side, Siyangena I've just mentioned now, the issue around the GO program. There was a settlement that we have reached with Naledi Rail in terms of an out-of-court settlement. Naledi has since withdrawn the application around the GO program in terms of the out-of-court settlement, and then we're also dealing with the Competition Commission in terms of a complaint laid by other bus operators around anti-competitive behavior between PRASA and AutoPax, and we've got a draft settlement on the table that's now currently being reviewed to close that matter. Apologies, Chair, for taking that time, but I'll close on that note. Thank you.
We still have time to answer questions,
huh? Yeah, absolutely.
I think the team is somewhat ready, but thanks for the extensive presentation that you have made, knowing very well that you have a steep rise in terms of meeting the basics of the legislation that governs your actions for their qualification to continue to run that service. SIU, that's captured some of the elements of what you are doing, but from yourselves. How many minutes do you want?
Maybe 40, Chair. No, I'm joking. take less than 10 minutes.
We'll appreciate that.
Can someone maybe help me get to the slide, to the presentation?
Together with the director and two officials of PRASA, that was subsequently dismissed around 2021. And also those DCs included some of the senior officials of PRASA. Then under supplier, again, same, there were also focus area 3 where we talk of supplier development. Again, that investigation has been completed with criminal evidence being referred to the NPA against 3 former accounting officers and 1 former company secretary for the contravention of various sections of the PFMA. Under focus area 4, where we talk of the early detection cable theft solution, which was based here in Cape Town, the investigation again has been completed. And a number of these matters we investigated, Chairperson, is that they were all mostly, I think in total 79 of the matters we investigated were procured through the confinement process, which we have found to have been irregular. And as a result thereof, that is why you find that in most of these reports, you find that we have referred evidence of criminal criminal referral to the NPA against the accounting officers who were instrumental in those contracts. A challenge in some of them is that they are no longer working for PRASA, and therefore we couldn't pursue them disciplinary. Focus area 5, the investigation again is complete. There is then 1 criminal referral against 1 GCO for the contravention of various sections of the PFMA. Then focus area 5, the supply of mobile transporters. Again, the investigation there has been complete. We had 1 DC referral to PRASA against a business unit manager which was submitted to PRASA. The last one under the proclamation was the investigation or the procurement of forensic services, where there were 2 companies, ValuCorp and Vectman's attorneys, and the appointment of Vectman's attorneys. Our finding is that we have found that the appointment of Vectman's attorneys by PRASA was irregular, and as a result, the SIU is busy considering the appropriate action against the 2 former board members that were instrumental in the appointment of Fragments. That's basically a summary of what we've done under the current proclamation which we're finalizing. Then SIU engaged PRASA in terms of the settlement agreement, where they were busy assisting with the investigation of material irregularities. That has been finalized. All of those investigations have been finalized. The SIU is now busy assisting PRASA in the disciplinary processes against the 33 that was reported earlier by the GCO. We're busy engaging with some of those disciplinaries, some of which are already now sitting at the CCMA. The challenge I must mention, I was actually worried that out of the 33, there seems to be very few dismissals. The challenge that Chairperson, if I can mention, is that in some of the disciplinary processes where we were busy assisting with giving evidence, you'll find that as you will be ambushed with new information, that was not made available during the investigation. And our report and findings will be based on the information that we would have received during the investigation. But now when you go to the DC, they ambush you with some documents which, had we had that information during the investigation, we may not have made those findings, which is why you'll find that you may have 33 referrals for DC, and yet you are finding less in terms of the guilty verdicts. So basically, that's what we have done. And then the third one, Chairperson, is that SIU is now busy with a motivation which has been submitted now to the Department of Justice, a motivation for a new proclamation. This new proclamation will more deal with matters that has been reported in the Zondo Commission. The problem that the motivation is sitting now with the Department of Justice. Just few areas, and all of the areas are those related to or mentioned in the Zondo Commission, one of which is the regular salary increase of the former GCEO, which is Mr. Collins Letswalo, which we are going to be one will be the SA gate and fence, which was not investigated in the previous in the current ending proclamation. And the third matter that we're going to be looking at is both the Shifambo rail leasing and the Siyagena contracts. Our focus there will be on the recovery of the money. We are busy working now with the DPCI, the Hawks, in terms of managing the investigations. As they are doing their criminal investigations, there is now a sharing of information to assist them with the documents that we have as they continue in the investigation. But our focus as the SIU will be more on the recovery of the money, making sure the money goes back to Prasa on both the Siyagena. We are doing this because we want to avoid the duplication of investigation. But as I say, our focus will be more on the recovery of the money. I've just already spoken about this one. Then also procurement of Royal Security and related companies. We did investigate Royal under the previous proclamation. However, there was new evidence in terms of the number of firms that are owned by this person, the Motley family related to Royal Security. That also will be part of the investigation, which will broaden the scope not only to look at Royal Security Company. The next, we'll also look at the serious maladministration. One of the key requests or the key findings by the Zondo Commission and the recommendation was that there need to be a commission to look into what led to the total collapse. To quote the Zondo Commission, the total ruin of Prasa and who may have benefited from that. We'll also look at an overall governance of Prasa as to what would have happened, what led to Prasa to be in that state as reported in the State Capture Commission. Another area that we will look at, these are all matters that, as I said, are part of the motivation. We'll also look at any irregular or proper conduct by officials of Prasa. That's basically that, Chairperson, in terms of the new proclamation that we are hoping the President is going to sign very soon. I know that by yesterday, the Advocate Mutibi had met with the Presidency to discuss to get the progress in terms of the process on the new proclamation, including other areas that were reported in the Zondo Commission. Chairperson, I'm done with my presentation on the previous one. I will then allow Mr. Mkungu to take us through the last two slides that talk to the left and audits. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, the DG, the Prasa Board and Prasa colleagues, and all protocol observed, good morning. These two slides we have done after the board of Prasa commissioned the left audit, we have touched the engagement with the group CE on how we are going to left audit. I can just today to announce that I have presented to the group EFCO on the 4th of May. There is a good support in the project. It is being welcomed. I would say that we are going to get a good cooperation in terms of from the top approach that we use to take when we do lifestyle audits. So let's give the hope that we are going to get the good results from top management first. The audit is expected to start from the 1st of June as we are going to sign all the necessities by both parties during this week, and then we finalize and start the project. Into the next slide. Now, in terms of the next slide is to more about on the process on how we are going to do the audit, just at the high level. We are going to first look at the group executive committee members as a whole, and executive committee members in the various business units, Prasa Rail, Prasa Tech, Prasa Crest, and Autopet, regional executives, senior management in corporate offices department, which is human capital, ICT, supply chain management, finance, and all employees in the SCM department from region, business units, and corporate office. What we do when the lobster road is identified that an employee's expenditure constantly exceed or his or her income, and it cannot be explained, what we do, we also raise that as the findings in our report. We do a report per person as we do the lifestyle audit. This means is a lifestyle audit done per person, and the report will be per person, and then we do the referral to the to be further investigation if needs to be by the inter department. If we need for any referral for DC, when we support the Praza on the DC with the evidence, and then if we need to refer to the other law enforcement agencies, then we support Praza as well to refer and also provide evidence either to HOS or any other law enforcement agency that we can work with in terms of further investigation or get that disciplinary going ahead. That is our first we're going to do. Then after we issue an overall report of the lifestyle audits, but we'll be accompanied by a report per person in terms of lifestyle audits of each person. I think they should check us at the high level.
Chairperson, that was the presentation from the Special Investigating Unit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. It advised the advocate committee that you stood perfectly on his behalf. Thank you very much. Thanks for the presentation. Colleagues, we're going to give over to you questions. Just trying to check who has an indication for Makachi. Do you have any? They don't indicate again. Yes, indeed, informed by the fact that you see, if you look into Prasa and the presence of the minister and the deputy, we had them here last time. The last time we had them was on another entity. With interest, the CEO of that entity appears in the list. You see, which is being followed. Here's the report. This is Prasa. There's been failure, breakage of railway systems, security lapses, and the infrastructure totality wrecked up. And here is their story. And currently they stand at 58% performance as recognized. The Office of the Auditor General has been persuasive of some of the critical elements which relate to irregularities in the space, and some of that work has been referred to the accounting officer for action. There's indication that some form of action is being undertaken. We still stand to see the level of success in terms of their own work. The gentleman is looking at me, the head of security. I would want to make reference to Honorable Lewis, who's going to be the first person, followed by Honorable Van Meenen, and Honorable Bukas will follow. Honorable Kwanto, then we'll follow in terms of that kind of a list. There comes Honorable Hadeb. That's part of the list. Honorable Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning to everyone that I haven't said good morning to. I was here quite early, and I think I went around making jokes with a few people. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the presentation. It is indeed a report on progress, as has been said, perhaps not as fast as we would like it, but certainly this there is progress, and it was witnessed on our visit to the central line a couple of weeks ago. But there are issues. The service is limited, and that's acknowledged. That's not something that is a surprise. But the corridors that have been opened are on a limited service. And then I gave a hint of this earlier. Then an issue like sand on the line closes the line on a regular basis between Simonstown and Fishhook. And I would think that that's something that we really need to deal with, even just to keep the limited service going. So that's one that we can have some comment. I don't know, you can pray for the winds to blow the other way, or you can do something practical. I don't know what, but I'm sure there are measures. But let's just talk about the signalling system. I mean, it's key, and I suspect that the old signalling system was wires laid along the tracks, wires connected to tracks, which controlled lights. Is the new signalling system going to move into the next century as opposed to be in the old century? In other words, satellite technology, wireless technology, in order to improve the service, but also to make it, there's nothing to steal, the point I'm trying to make. The French bought or made new trains, but they had quite the opposite problem. Their trains are too wide for the platforms, and they've got hundreds of platforms they have to modify, as I understand it. So being a big gap is a much easier issue to deal with, I would think. But is it being dealt with, and how is it being dealt with? You've reported on the ghost workers, and thank you that there is clearly progress there. But you've also talked about right-sizing. What exactly are the 15,000 employees doing, or have they been doing for the past 3-4 years? Where are they? What are they doing? Are they still painting stations as badly and as unprofessionally as we saw the one at Mabopane being painted? Are we paying people to sit at home? What are they doing, these 15,000? And is that part of the recapitalization funding that the taxpayer is having to fund? You did talk about the Stadler issue. So as I understand it from, I mean, I know you were rushed, so I apologize for that, but essentially there is no progress, am I right? And so we're going to try and lease trains we've already paid for, because we need them. Am I misunderstanding this? What we're trying to do there, and what are the chances of getting this commercial agreement settled and the trains modified and usable? Are the ones that are in the country, have they been modified so that we can use them, or are you going to use them on lines with the higher reticulation lines on it? Autopacks. You're in court with the other operators, and there are numerous other bus operators and passenger. Why don't we just let it go and be liquidated? Why are we asking the taxpayer to keep it going when there's absolutely no need for it in the market? There's no strategic need for it. I don't understand why we're looking for taxpayer bailouts there. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, let me just say again, I've got a long list of questions, and I think you said before the meeting you had a long list, but most of my questions have been dealt with, and fairly thoroughly, so thank you very much for that, yeah.
few are still under questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Elise, for those questions. And my colleagues can come in as well where I don't cover appropriately. Honorable Elise, just in turn, you are correct. The issue of the limited services is something we need to see how we optimize and start running higher frequency services. Now, you raise a very pertinent question, the example of Cape Town. When we're already running a limited services, and then on the southern suburbs line, you've got the issue of sand, which stops the service. And it's been an ongoing problem. I think you're well aware of that, Honorable Lees. There are interventions that I can, I think, at least happily report around addressing that. Firstly, there's a joint project underway by PRASA and the City of Cape Town. The first one is at Glencairn, where we've got the dunes, where there is some beach reclamation that is being undertaken there, and the shifting of the dune backwards because of the beach reclamation, gabions being implemented there as well. And that project is due for completion now in July of this year. It's been a four-year process to get that one going. And that already has, that project on its own has already seen some positive results in terms of the area of Glencairn. But I think the area that you also raising is at Simonstown, where previously we also had a wall that was trying to prevent some of the sand. That had over time collapsed. That wall has been rebuilt. In fact, it was done in December of last year. But to supplement that, because it's an ongoing thing, and you're right, the winds are not going to stop. If anything, what we've seen with some of the climate change, some of the things are more severe. What we've also done just this year, Honorable Lees, is to appoint a per-way maintenance contractor for that section, specifically from Simonstown through to Muizenberg, where we've got this high risk of stopping services because of the sand. And the role of that contractor on-site is to deal with any per-way challenges, but also dealing with sand on the tracks to ensure that we don't have disruption of the services. So on that one, we've tried to put in place interventions together with the City of Cape Town, together with our own interventions to address those challenges. I'm hoping going forward there'll be minimal disruption based on the issue of sand. Also having this contractor full-time on board to assist that line is open for operation. So that's some of the interventions that we have done. I think there's a bigger discussion there about the issue of climate change and the impact of our southern, the lines on the coastal lines, put it that way, that we need to address in terms of having more sustainable solutions there. But on that one, that are some of the things that we have implemented to try and address that specific challenge on that corridor. The issue of the signaling system, you are again spot on. We are obviously looking at a modernized signaling system. The program that we have been rolling out since 2013-14 was moving from a mechanized signaling system where you physically got to move the crank, the thing to move from one track to the other, to electronic systems. And through that process, we did implement, if I can call it, anti-theft and vandalism methodology into that program. We were not able to remove entirely all cables that deal with signaling, but we've minimized that. Now, the reality, Honorable Lees, is that that project that we started implementing around signaling modernization has also been impacted by theft and vandalism. So when we talk now about recovering some of our signaling systems, even some of the new work that we have done that has been impacted by theft and vandalism, the programs that we are rolling out now, Honorable Members, is looking at an obviously electronic signaling system, but moving from that to in-cab signaling. And that is a more modern way. You virtually reduce all your wayside infrastructure, your cables, your signal points and all of that. Everything is dealt with within the train itself, the cabin. So that is the progression that we are moving from electronic to in-cab signaling. So, and it's specifically around reducing the impact of theft and vandalism on the system. So those are some of the projects that I was indicating that we are looking at rolling out. One thing I do want to mention, Honorable Members, is that because some of the things is not overnight that you implement it. we are looking at rolling out electronic authorization system as well. And this is to replace our manual authorization. At the moment, when anything happens to our signaling system, we revert to manual. And not only does that result in limited service, but it also results in higher risk to your to operating trains. Because now it's manual, it's human factors that are coming in. Yes, absolutely. So with this system, the electronic authorization, even if anything happens down the line to signaling, at least you revert to electronic authorization rather than back to manual. So that's one of the programs that we're rolling out on the signaling. But critical is to get our trains running at higher frequency. I think that across the board is critical for the sustainability of PRASA. How are we dealing with the platform rectification? Honorable members, this is a program that I'm sure SCOPA has picked up. It's been on the PRASA program for a number of years, but very little to show in terms of platform rectification. We've now said we need to have short-term, interim solutions, medium, as well as the long-term solution. The long-term solution is about redoing the track, your track slab or your... that we need to, particularly at our high volume stations, because where the platform gap ends up coming is through your maintenance cycles. You start lifting the track when you put more new ballast, and over time you find there are the gaps. But in some of the platforms, you find that these platforms initially were built for freight trains, and hence you've got that huge gaps that we are dealing with. So at some point, we can take you to the Tembisa line, where the team, where particularly severe, have done some what we're calling as the interim solutions, just to address that risk of passengers, and particularly here your special needs passengers, the elderly, the young, those physically disabled, to clear a gap of 600, 700 millimeters, nearly a meter, is quite significant. And we have done some stuff, we've even shared some videos around what we have done on the Tembisa line. It's not the complete solution, but it's critical to show that we start taking action around the platform gaps. And you're right, I mean, it's probably something less of an issue than what we've seen in France. We had train pulled in and knocks the platforms. So there are things that we are doing, both short, even down, honorable members, to saying on some platforms, let's even procure mobile ramps, just to show that some of the things, we can have the platform marshals. If you've got your station managers that know the station, they would know. Typically, we've got 3-4 wheelchair users as an example. They will know that at this station, let's get a few mobile ramps that we can quickly assist in the interim. So these are the things the team is looking at to show that there's progress around addressing the issue of platform challenges. Okay. The issue of right-sizing, yes, we it is an exercise that we have done, honorable members, around looking at particularly where we were in... let's call it, I've mentioned 2013, 2014, when we were moving close to 600 million passengers per annum. What was our headcount back then versus our headcount now, not only in terms of a reduced service, but also comparison, even if we were back to those numbers, where's the headcount sitting? So those exercises have been done. But I need to stress the point that there needs to be a lot more work around that process, in terms of consultation around how these things must be rolled out appropriately. We are recovering. There are programs that I think the various divisional CEOs can speak to in terms of how we address the issue of the utilization of staff during this period when we are running a limited service. We've always had challenges of dealing with an example issue of overtime and stuff like that, and it's now how you roster some of these things to ensure you reduce some of those costs. But the colleagues can go into that, Honorable Lees, in a bit more detail around how we're managing that process. The issue of Stadler, and this is really something we need to see how quickly we can close this one, Honorable Chair and members, is there's a dire need for locomotives at PRASA, particularly the diesel at the moment because of the infrastructure that has been badly vandalized. Even though the network we predominantly operate on, Transnet for the long distance and even in the Eastern Cape, has been impacted by theft and vandalism. Eastern Cape is London to Berlin. We used to run electric locomotives to provide that service. We've not run a service since August last year because of the theft and vandalism of the electric infrastructure. We do not have diesel locomotives. fortunately, and I think positively, we've managed to reintroduce that service towards the end of April by recovering some of our own diesel locomotives. But there's still an aspect of unreliability around those locomotives. But we managed to recover is London-Berlin. We have now got the team looking at recovering some of our locomotives to send to Gqeberha, Port Elizabeth, to bring that service back. We're engaging quite closely with Transnet to see how do we recover these lines, both from an infrastructure, but secondly also to address the issue of availability of locomotives. Now, on the issue of Stadler, and where we've brought in the issue of the leasing, Honourable Lees, is that the leasing of these locomotives, yes, there's been payments made in the past. As we currently speak, we don't own these locomotives. It's sitting within the liquidator. We require locomotives. Our approach has always been to see how do we extract best value out of this process. Based on the $2 billion that we have already spent or thereabouts, we've seen the previous process of auctioning these locomotives through the liquidation, that these locomotives have basically gone for a steal. A locomotive that's in the region of 40 to 50 million rand per locomotive was auctioned off at between 6 and 8 million rand. There's no value that Prasa will get back by selling those locomotives through the liquidation, and we end up with 6 million rand when we know what the value of this locomotive. So the commercial agreement is still one we are pursuing and trying to close. The latest advice we've got around that is to follow a route of departure from a procurement process, Section 79, and we're busy with that application that will go to Treasury. What we are saying in the interim, because we need to get locomotives, if we go out to the open market to lease, we're going to end up paying significantly more to lease those locomotives, whereas through this process, we will just pay for actual running costs to access those locomotives. And that's what we're looking at as an interim solution around the locomotives. Autopax, and I've got the CEO of Autopax sitting here, Mr. Neil Roosh. There's a lot of discussion around that aspect. One of the things, Honourable Lees and members, that firstly, obviously, within the PRASA mandate, our mandate is to provide long-distance bus services. And the discussion around, there are many other, we've taken cognizance of that, and those companies are operating on a sustainable basis. Our business rescue plan is to bring Autopax back to a sustainable level of operation. The one key thing that I want to raise, and the CEO of Autopax can come in if he wants later, is that the criticality of Autopax, Honourable Lees, is if you're looking at the bus market, Autopax has always been positioned at a strategic level to deal with, let's call it, those matters that in terms of from an affordability point of view. You will see without Autopax having operated during this period of business rescue, we have seen a significant difference between the ticket prices of bus companies and where Autopax is pegged at. So there is a strategic need to regulate that market by having Autopax in terms of where this marketing was pitched at. But that's a much longer discussion we will go into. I think what's important is sharing that business rescue plan, how we move from where we are now to a sustainable business. And there's a clear plan on the table, but there are some critical requirements to achieve that, including the recapitalization that I've mentioned earlier. I think those were the questions, Honourable Lees, that you addressed. Thank you.
I found this, Honourable Lees. Okay, thank you very much. Honourable Van Minen?
Can I just ask one? Sorry, Benedict. In terms of the Transnet and locos, some time ago there was Transnet weren't exactly forthcoming with locos. Are they being more cooperative?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yes, at the moment, I think one of the things that have happened, maybe we didn't touch on it earlier. One of the impediments before about this relationship about coming forth on locomotives, there was always this issue of outstanding debt between PRASA and Transnet. What has transpired in the last few months, specifically end of March, is that debt has been settled. Number one, firstly, in terms of an offset arrangement that we had between, there were monies that Transnet owed PRASA and vice versa. There was an offset arrangement around that. And then the balance, we had always had a proposal through to Treasury that we make we allow some of our capital allocation to be moved to OPEX, that we can settle some of our challenges, some of our debt, sorry. And that approval was given end of March through the Treasury, and that debt was settled. We have seen quite a significant improvement in terms of cooperation now. I do though want to say that Transnet has got its own challenges with availability of locomotives, but there is a willingness now for us to see how do we get access to some locomotives, and those discussions now as we speak are happening to see what is possible in the interim to get access to locomotives with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to be terribly long, Chair. I'm still battling with a cough. We were talking about a 75% reduction in crime and theft. Over what time period is that? So, you know, from when to when? And I'm afraid I do have to ask, is that because there's possibly very little left to steal? You know, what we saw last year when we were in Gauteng was very alarming. Now, on that point, I mean, the fancy new trains that are being built by the French, but we also saw what was happening with the tracks, and quite frankly, in a lot of those tracks, those trains weren't able to run. Are we seeing an improvement on that? I'm thinking specifically of Gauteng. I wasn't able to go on the visit earlier this year in Philippi, but what we saw there was very worrying indeed. Now, in terms of the rail user numbers, what was the historic high in terms of rail user numbers? What is Prasa currently sitting at across the country in terms of user numbers? And what is the target that you would wish to achieve over what time period? I think that's important because that shows the confidence of people using the tracks and the rail. And certainly in the Western Cape, I mean, it's reduced, I think it's at about 153 trains a day. So, I mean, that really is something we need to look at. Then also, I just want to touch on the issue of the relocations. It's good and well to say that Prasa isn't in the business of relocations, but if you're not guarding the tracks and the stations properly, people do move into those spaces where space is available, particularly in the urban centres, and one ends up then relying on the local authorities and provincial authorities to move people. There isn't always land available, certainly in Cape Town. It's an issue where there is a great deal of demand for land, and it's not easy to simply then relocate a community. So it's good and well to say that Prasa doesn't do relocations, but on the other hand, what are you doing and how are you improving your system to actually stop those occupations happening so that that whole issue doesn't come into the mix? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable for Menon, and see you.
Okay, can I ask, Alec, can you deal with the security question and I'll come in after you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. In terms of the theft and vandalism, the analysis has been done over the past 24 months, specifically with the infrastructure coming back online. If we have to look as an example in the 2019-2020 period, when we looked at the incidence of theft and vandalism within Prasa, it was sitting at about 5,000 per annum. When we moved and we started implementing in the 2021 year, that was decreased to 1,700. And now in this financial year, with our corridors operating, we are below 900 and still decreasing. And that's with, obviously, the increasing of infrastructure. In terms of the prevention measures, Prasa runs operations nationally together with law enforcement. So our actual encroachments aren't growing. The issue is more of a management of the current areas that were infested, well, not infested, but taken over, should I say, with the shacks. However, in the areas of where we are controlling currently, there's no additional shacks being built. And as I said, we drive every second week. We are running operations together with law enforcement to deal with any new encroachments or attempted encroachments.
Is that a guarantee? Because that's a critical question that she has asked. Is that a guarantee from your side? 2 weeks security on a more prone area in terms of occupations. Are you putting your head on the block?
Chair, it's already happening as we speak. So all areas that get monitored currently by our protection services together with law enforcement, we monitor any people trying to re-encroach or encroach on areas that have that space. So every second week as we speak, it could happen in the Western Cape on a weekly basis in various areas of the country. We are dealing with encroachments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Okay, Chair, just Honourable Van Minden also asked about the tracks, some of the challenges that we've got with the tracks, and I've also got the acting CEO of CHECK here, Mr. Fana Marutla, who is also our chief engineer for Perway, and he will come in. We have missed out on anything. So, Honourable Van Manen, you are correct. The issue of the tracks, and we've always reported, we measure these things in terms of what we call the TQI, Track Quality Index, where we are. And we know in many cases it is below where it should be from a standard point of view. It's one of the key things that also, Honourable Chair and Member, that results in us having to run our trains at reduced speeds because of the quality of the track. What we have done, and from in terms of to address that, there are, I think, a number of things I want to raise, but two in specific that I want to mention. We have now been able to procure these on-track machines, and you will see on some of the corridors where we have already implemented them. And this is to look at the issue of the grinding, the ballast and stuff to improve the quality index of the track. The second one is we are now out on tender for new rails. And this is a national tender. It will be going out soon. We're talking about, Fana, how much kilometers of track? 3,000? 1,300 kilometers of new track that we want to be procuring. We have also just concluded a contract now at least for 150 kilometers of new track for some of those key areas. So it's one of the areas that we have put significant focus on. The team at CHECK have made some progress in some of the key projects that we need to ensure that we can run improved speed on these corridors. Other projects like your drainage and stuff around the tracks, the teams are working on all of that as well. Anything you want to add, Fana?
I think you've covered.
Okay, all right. Thank you. So those are some of the interventions that we have done. The issue on passenger numbers, you are correct, Honourable Van Manen. I mentioned earlier, when we were talking at a high, PRASA was sitting at close to 600 million passengers per annum. And in fact, back then, in 2014, 2015, with the modernization program and all of this, we wanted to exceed that. We wanted to grow beyond the 600 million. Today, and having closed the previous financial year, that has dropped to 15 million. So you can see it's a huge, over 90% dropped in terms of that. But that is because when we ran the 600 million passenger annum, we were running between 40 and 44 corridors, lines or services around the country. With our recovery program, you've heard earlier, we're sitting at about 18, 19 corridors of that. This year we will be recovering more. But critical to bring those numbers back, Honourable Chair, is the signalling project. It's only then that we can start running a full service. At the moment, on these corridors we've recovered, typically you're running anywhere from a frequency of a one-hour frequency to even a 90-minute frequency on some of these corridors. On these corridors in the past, and with the new signaling, we can have the capability of running a train every 3 minutes, but most likely you're looking at a train every 5 minutes in your peak period. So this is what we need to get to, that will see the passenger numbers improve. We have set ourselves targets. Going through the next, if I can call it, MTF period. As I said, we were sitting at 15. While we are still busy recovering, Honourable Van Manen, and the time it gets to take back the signalling systems, the next 2 to 3 years, there will probably be a bit of a slower recovery in terms of the increase of those numbers. But post that three-year period and the implementation of the full signalling systems, you would see a much steeper increase in terms of passenger numbers. The target that management has set is certainly within that 5 to 7 years is to recover as a minimum back to where we were before, let's call it the destruction of the network,
sort of your 200 plus million, and with the rollout of full modernization, there's nothing that should stop us from moving back to those numbers. The strategy is not only about capturing your captive users, which is a big portion of our numbers, but with a modernized system, it's also to ensure we can attract choice users to the network. So that's part of the strategy going forward. We can share that growth that we have got, but the next 2 or 3 years, I think it will be more modest. Once the signaling is fully in place, we will see a much more steeper increase in terms of the passenger numbers. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, fine.
Baie dankie, agbare voorzitter.
Goed, dankie.
Ek weet nog nie wat het geword van die feit dat ons die hele vergadering sal afgesluit.